found out.
Oh, no, I actually didn't get into this game until lately.
You were telling me last year there was already that many people then.
Well, we're forever going to have some nebulous aspects to these. Yeah.
When you speak of the number of annuity participants, are you considering the present people receiving annuity permanent fund distribution checks?
What I'm talking about...
About roughly 400,000, a little less, receive permanent fund distribution checks. Is that right?
The number of applications received that are valid was 473,000, I think, last year. I have to check.
Okay. Well, I know, but in the ballpark. Now,
seems to be only running about 40,000.
As little as 5% of that. We're talking about infants on up to 65.
But were you running these numbers assuming about 30%? But as I said before, we're very uncertain about the factors that will govern participation, and I think it depends very greatly on how the program is sold.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yeah, but your figures included all of the recipients.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't include people under 18 because we can't assume that they
are. Yeah, that's in the notes, too, and now you jar my memory.
Hal, I don't know to what extent that might relieve some of your anxieties, whether it adequately does so or...
Well, one of the things that we can do is we can't solve it all in one day here. We can look at the bill overnight and then see what sections we can do it. That's just a suggestion, Governor.
What I would like to have our legal folk do here is incorporate this in an actual amendment to the bill, how it would fit in and where it would appear.
Well, and John and I have been discussing Al's problem with it, mm-hmm. some length with it, and we've come to the conclusion that it is workable to make the stair step with the 60-year-old, right?
I can't foresee any problems with it, and as I think we both observed, it's not critical to the annuity program to make the existing elderly participate in it because the amounts are so small.
Let's put it this way: is there anybody who's opposed to the body or incorporating that concept into the bill?
When you're talking about stair step now, is it? It's going to be 65 for a while, and then something else.
This is a different stair step from what
this is not. This is not stair step out. This is stair step in.
Okay. What it does is determine who's going to foot the bill for this person receiving the $250 eventually.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I wanted to get straight.
Let me check up if I listened correctly. I'm reading 60 or plus, sure, 250 plus 300 dividends, plus 3% increment per year. 59, if they set aside the dividend, then at 65 they'd get the same,
right,
same as now. If they spend the dividend, they would receive 250 minus the annuity.
If you make it in this such a way, I think it'll be easy to sell to older Alaskans and to the public.
I'm not worried about the old people. I'm worried about the young people. I don't know how you're going to sell to them.
I don't think we should worry about the younger people. I think the younger people can take care of themselves, like myself. For instance, I can work for my retirement myself.
Well, Jay,
if you would,
us young guys can do it too. You know?
If you would, though, would you come up with a language that would insert itself in that bill and accomplish that objective? We'll have that tomorrow then for us to look at. Well, let's move on.
With a growing family, you better be able to take care of yourself.
Let's move on to the. I have down here where you had a request for hearings, and I certainly think that once we have an annuity and/or an alternative concept, perhaps the benefits concept approach, pretty well structured as far as we can go with them, that it is appropriate to get public input. As I felt all along that we would have things surface here that, frankly, I think would be so confusing to the public, and so I think you've expressed, and all of us have, a pretty good awareness of the major concerns, certainly with the membership of this committee and the attendance of some of the older Action Committee folk here. We've had some input in that regard, but appropriately, perhaps, if we can come up with two that reflects the best thinking of this committee, and then maybe we're given until February to make a final recommendation. I'm not so sure that that necessarily precludes us holding those hearings, say in Juneau through teleconferencing capabilities or whatever. At the time, legislature also is in attendance. I don't know, rather than trying to do it, say, next month or next week or...
Or one of the things that you can divide this commission and have the older Alaskans perhaps select four or five sites throughout the state of Alaska, a group here in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and maybe a place out in the rural areas with telecommunications, and let this commission go and explain the bill and what we've come up with and hear the expressions of older Alaskans throughout the state of Alaska. That's, it can be done in one day if it's done right.
But you would agree that until we've got a fairly finalized recommendation, that would be inappropriate.
Committee hearings, public hearings held by this committee, help us with getting the legislature to accept our recommendations?
Well, I think they would be if they're held, perhaps again, in conjunction with interested legislators who might wish to be in attendance to hear the same. That's why I'm kind of of the view, when's the legislature go in session?
14th
of January?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure.
They're going to hold a committee hearing.
Well, of course they are. Of course they are. But I would like to have some finalized recommendations from the committee prior to that time. If we have them in sufficient time to perhaps conduct something along the lines you're talking about, that's fine. But I don't, obviously, you're going to have heavy legislative involvement in hearing the process.
The media keeps calling me up all the time and saying, well, what's the proposal? Well, today I got one proposal, tomorrow I got a different one, and some other time I got to...
Yeah.
And until you get something that's finalized, nobody can tell what you got.
Yeah, I agree.
That's right. So I think you'd have to have a product before you can sell it.
Well, I think we would agree that once we get that product, we should have some sort of hearing process. Okay, well, let's... Al, you mentioned something about a vote, statewide vote. I'm not sure how you... would key that into whatever proposal we come up with. I kind of like that concept, but I'm not sure what you had in mind exactly.
I'm going to pass on that at this time. If it was to do with, perhaps with the permanent fund dividend distribution plan, then perhaps we need to stay
there.
I will cancel that at this particular time, because we're playing with everybody's money, and that's why I brought that particular subject up.
In other words, before any erosion of the dividend would occur to fund this program, you would like to have
is that what I
hear you saying?
That's correct.
Either or.
Yeah, I have no problem with that either. But that, until we determine how, where this funding is coming from, be premature to key that into the bill and warn people what to do. Okay, you've got a cutoff point suggestion here now. Now, would you explain further?
I think on that particular one is when does the, this can be done by research, when does the annuity program is beneficial to older Alaskans? You know, we don't know how many people will participate in this particular program annuity. You know, we can all listen to various consultants, they can come up with numbers that 50% will participate, only 20% will participate. We need to look at this particular cutoff. If we're only going to have certain amount, not very many, then should we look at the annuity program? I think these numbers need to be looked at. I think also in line with this, we need to look at the potential effect of the annuity income that has on persons' benefits, such as the older age assistance programs. And that's what I'm saying on this one, Governor. But these numbers would have to be run by Department of Revenue and also the consultants, Greg Erickson, and so forth.
Yeah, but when you get down to pure support by the state, I mean, it's all the state dollars. You're going to give it to them in longevity bonus, you're going to give it to them in aid to dependent children, you're going to give it to them in old age assistance, somewhere along the line. It's all state dollars, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure.
What I'm saying is that, like Al mentioned, that if it's going to affect the old age assistance, well, there's only a certain amount you can give. You know, I mean, within propriety and within the statutory rules and within common sense. And if you can only give a certain amount, well, I guess what you're saying is we have to make a determination of where it's going to come from, or are you trying to get more money to one than the other?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that we need just to protect the old age assistant benefits. That's just what I'm saying. At the same time, we're looking at this drafted bill. That's all I'm saying.
I'm wondering how this...
The guy's collecting 500 old age assistants, and this bill that we put out, and there's 400 people that would hurt, and it would benefit 16,000. I'm thinking the 400, I'm sympathetic to him, but the 16,000 is my concern more than the 400.
That was only my concern.
There was another piece that I thought Chairman Adams had, and that was, we're not dealing with the people on welfare right now, but if in 10 years the participation rate among people who are 55 today was very low, and it's now 10 years from now, and these people are now 65, and for some reason their pensions aren't very large, or whatever the case may be, they are going to receive a benefit, a very reduced longevity bonus benefit, which, unlike the longevity bonus today, their incomes may be so low that rather than not filing for old age assistance, because people don't file for old age assistance today, they may become rather large consumers of public assistance. So the lower the percentage of participation, there is concern, though we can't really act on it, there is concern if your percentage of participation is so low, if you've built a program that's not attractive to people, that we will leave the next generation, 10 years from now, that's sitting in the legislature, they're going to be faced with this group of people who, none of them chose the program. And we've got it sitting there. They didn't choose it. And then they're back sort of on the political doorstep saying...
Makes no difference, Marcia, because if they qualify as old age assistance recipients, then they can be here, 1 week and get it?
No. What I'm saying is that they'll be back on your doorstep saying, I want the longevity bonus to be higher, even though I didn't participate. So you have the ever-decreasing... longevity bonus in this bill. And I think that's a point that he's trying to make, that you've got people who don't have the money that won't... You've sort of taken care of the group that's 5 years, and you got this group down there. And I'm not sure you can deal with it, but you do have to face the issue that people won't participate very much. They'll be back on your doorstep.
That have a cash, the cash is all they got, and that's the only thing that they live on. And
they're maybe not very forward thinkers.
And it's all that they got at the time, and they can't put anything away, and they can't shorten their income at this time because they won't subsist. If you shorten their income, they aren't going to make it. So as a result, they have to spend what they have now, which will short them out down the line with an annuity program.
See, that's really the problem. Uh-huh.
Well, of course, that's why...
I don't know how you address it.
It is addressed if you take this other concept in place. That's why I said it was essentially eat your cake and have it too situation, the benefit concept approach. Will give you both the dividend and the annuity ad infinitum. So that alleviates, it seems to me, almost all of your concerns, but presents another one, that is, where do you get that money to begin
that's
with?
Right.
But I think it's one of the major reasons it warrants further exploration. Yeah.
Governor, I think the idea of front-loading is just for this purpose. To the extent that there is front-loading, it should make it more attractive for people to opt in.
That's right.
That's the principal reason why this bill is drafted, authorizes additional front-loading to be put in by the administration. That means they get more.
Yeah, but if you don't have the money to buy the Ford, it doesn't matter how attractive the Cadillac is.
You're still going
to
want
it. Of course, that'll be the case regardless. You've got this interest group coming to you 10 years from now. If you haven't got the money, you're not going to be able to do it.
So I understand that.
That's going to depend on the revenues no matter which way.
I think that John's proposal about how to handle the next 5 years is a real good proposal. If you are concerned about the real needy 10 or 20 years from now, maybe that you have to look at those people who are on welfare or whatever they are and figure out how you're going to deal with those people making this investment that will pay off in the future.
for the state so that you get them off welfare by the time they get to be 65. You may be just putting on annuity.
How are you going to get them off of welfare?
Well,
you're presenting things that are so nebulous.
No, I'm not.
Yeah,
Senator, you could establish a needs-based not
program.
Might
not be flask at 10 years from now, see?
No, but you have somebody who hits the program at the age of 65.
Right.
Okay?
But then
they have never been able to afford...
He'll be able to tell them what to do.
Yeah, but they've never been able to afford to forego that permanent fund dividend.
Marcia, 10 years, how are you going to plan for something that might happen 10 years
from now? Senator, you planned for 40 on that chart.
I didn't.
Well,
not for nothing.
Do you see any way of amending this bill to incorporate that concern? Does anybody out there see a specific amendment that would take that into consideration that's worth discussing? Seems to me that, again, we're talking about issues that are resolved under the benefit concept approach automatically, that maybe are...
Well, I think if you have an income that is less than the... If you have an income that's less than a longevity bonus...
What they're trying to say is they want to base that on needs base again.
No, I haven't gone to that. What I'm saying is that you've got to buy... Some of these people have to have the ability to buy into the annuity program. Okay? I'm not saying go up to 75,000.
There isn't anything that you're going to treat everybody equally. There isn't a thing that's devised in this world that everybody is equal. It might say so under the Constitution, but that's it.
Of course, I suppose it wouldn't be without the realm of possibility that if the legislature so chose some 5-10 years from now, when those folk emerge, to come in and say, hey, we're going to buy... We talked about this at one time, the possibility of buying in... annuity credits, and I suppose that would be an option the legislature might wish to explore.
That's what I'm trying to get at, is you buy in those credits, it's a question of whether or not you buy them over time, which would be cheaper for the state, or buy them all in on an annual,
if you demonstrate a certain need at that stage in time, you'd be eligible for buy-in, again, depending on legislative appropriation, to provide the funding to do it.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I just wanted to comment that if you were considering buying in for 20 years down the line, you'd have to be careful not to buy in based on the number of years that the person had already been here, because that's going to get you into right to travel problems. So it'd be better to buy in incrementally as it went along.
What she means, I think, is her and Greg are strategically planning what's going to happen for the administration 10 years from now, what's going to cost them. And if you could buy it cheaper now, it would be better now than 10 years from now. Is that what you think?
Well, I think that that's probably true.
Well, everything is going to be cheaper now than it is 10 years from now.
But you have to, if you could find some way to get these credits for people who can't afford them,
But then you're separating classes again. Then you're treating one group of people entirely different with a major annuity program, but you're giving some people a leg up and other people not. How do you do that?
And wouldn't they also be
the result
equal protection?
Is the same.
Well, equal protection.
Yeah, the same equal protection. I mean, that's not an equal protection issue. But I mean, you're also giving rich people money that they're just going to hand off to the federal government.
Of course, most of these folk you're talking about are going to be eligible for other programs from the state that would. Offset it rather than the... There's no way escaping it. We're warping it around to a welfare concept to some extent by doing that. And I'm not sure.
What we've said is that the longevity bonus program is a giveaway program with no needs-based criteria. We have never said anybody who got here 1 year ago worked in Alaska for their longevity bonus. We have simply said we want to make sure that people who retire in Alaska have the financial resources to do so. And that's what this has been about.
But every program fades that out somewhere down the pike. The original longevity bonus program, there would have been absolutely no annuity longevity bonus.
But right now,
down the
pike. So we're into public
we're trying to cover and pull a much broader blanket over future Alaskans than the original program contemplated. And again, I'm not sure how you would amend this bill. If somebody's got a specific amendment to language in this bill that deals with that issue, I think this committee ought to consider it. Absent that, rather than anguishing over it, I think we probably ought to move on.
The amendment would be that people who are low income could apply for credit.
Those people who are making less than $25,000 a year now, they would apply for credits at a future date at this particular cost now for future time. That's what you're saying?
I don't think I would make it
money.
$10,000, $5,000.
Something like
why
that.
Why don't you do this? Then
you're putting it on a niche base again, see?
Why don't you do this? Would you take a look at this over the interim tonight and come up with, if you wish, some specific language, and we'll consider it by the committee and vote it up and down. Which is what I think we ought to do with all these proposals and move on from there rather than high center on. So with that, if you want to do that, and anyone else who has any proposals, let's do that and be prepared to act on the final one tomorrow, okay? But, all right, let's... The eligibility for welfare concern, of course, depends on anything we do, and again, it's going to probably require some national congressional legislation to adequately address. I don't think there's much we can incorporate in this bill by way of amendment that is pertinent to that issue. Am I wrong, or does anybody have any suggested language that would deal with that insofar as this bill is concerned? If not, have I missed any of your key points?
Thank you.
Are there other...
Now, is it my understanding, John, tonight, you and Deborah are going to work this afternoon and some kind of proposed language in order to enable this stair-step in?
That's right.
Okay.
All right. Good.
And let's make our marching orders clear that the language we're going to come up with would... in essence, exempt anyone who is 60 years or older, say, on the effective date of the act,
right,
from having to worry about the annuity program.
And everybody...
Conversely, anybody who is 59 and 364 days old on the effective date of this act is either going to face a substantially reduced ALB or is going to have to place his permanent fund dividend in the annuity account.
Make sure that when we're talking about stair-stepping that we say specifically stair-step in and not stair-step out, because you talk stair-step out, the old-timers are going to... We're going to lose three or four of them down there, and we haven't got them insured yet. So make sure we get insured before we lose anybody.
By stair step out, you mean people who would.
Well, that was Al's original stair step, and then the program was over with. That was the original stair stepping. It was 5 years of program or 10 years of program.
The stairs collapsed.
So this would be stair stepping them in. In other words, this would bring them in earlier than what they were supposed to bring in.
Well, as I'm hearing it, and I'm only hearing one proposed amendment. The language of the bill is written now, specific proposed amendments. There may be additional ones coming in tomorrow.
I have a question.
Bob?
I have a question. Section 3713147, annuity account. The annuity account is established as a separate account in the Alaska Permanent Fund. I wonder if the Permanent Fund trustees have any problem with that.
Dave, you didn't hear that question, but it's right in your bailiwick. Would you reiterate it, Bob, please?
I read in this proposed bill, annuity account. The annuity account is established as a separate account in the Alaska Permanent Fund. Do you have any problem with that language?
Well, actually, yes, Mr. Chairman, I think we would prefer, really, that it be set up in PERS and TERS, or as a separate account administered by PERS and TERS, rather by the Permanent Fund. Because the general handling of annuities and actuarial tables and all of this stuff is with the expertise of the PERS and TERS program. The Permanent Fund would prefer simply to be investors of money and not administrators of the program. So I think if we had druthers, it would probably best be in the PERS and TERS with the Treasury.
Well, I don't know where you could put it there. I know.
Yes.
Go ahead, Deb.
I'm sorry. I thought the way the bill was drafted, it leaves the money to be managed by the Permanent Fund, but leaves the administration of the annuity program itself
The Permanent Fund, when we first started to put together the separate organization, did a study of whether or not the Permanent Fund ought to also do the investing for PERS and TERS. After all, put all the investment people together in one bag. And I think the conclusions that were drawn from that study was that the goals are somewhat different. And rather than commingle apples and oranges in terms of long-term goals, remember the TERS and PERS retirement programs have to throw off a certain amount of money on a near-time basis. And their investment criteria and strategy are quite different from an organization that is really saving for the future for the long run. So the conclusion of that study was that the Permanent Fund should not absolve PERS and TERS. Now, if there was a long-range desirable ability to put all of that kind of investment together, then you probably would be
please keep it for me.
One major difference is that this is a defined contribution rather than a defined benefit program, so that the annuity program is based on simply the earnings that the funds have made rather than any revenue demands today based on defined benefit that PERS and PERS are faced with. And so that
the actual impact of putting it in the permanent fund, other than perhaps diversion of purpose, which maybe my trustees might have some problem with, the real impact in terms of dollars, for example, is really only the difference of having a separate audit, $20,000 a year. It could be commingled, it could be invested with our funds, and, you know, an accountant to keep the books straight and someone to audit it. So there's no operational impact. It's philosophical more than anything else. Is to want to divert the permanent fund away from the straight savings function to handle some of this other type stuff. And that's philosophical.
I guess our perception was that you could earn more by joining up with the permanent fund than you could by investing separately.
I guess we'll have to
excuse me,
trustees on that.
The annuity account is not making disbursements for the annuity.
Right.
It's a lump sum transfer to the annuity fund.
It's our money, and these guys act like it's there.
Annually.
Right. The practical bottom line is a certain amount handled within the fund. That's where the judgment ought to be.
It
just commingled and would be invested on the same basis and everything else.
Well, and that has a perceptual attraction, I think, to the general public that looks at the permanent fund, again, as a good, sound, solid, much dear credit, I would say, and a safer repository of their annuity dollars. Now, I agree, you guys shouldn't have to fool with the mechanics of managing and distributing and anything of that nature, but I would think it would be rather simple to just carve that out from your investment returns as an account that is, but maybe, I don't know, do you want to propose some, maybe you would like to propose some amendments for consideration of the committee tomorrow in that regard.
In conjunction
with, yeah, with John there.
The practical effect is $25,000
a year
operational cost.
By hook or by crook, we're going to get in bed with that permanent fund, baby. We're
ready.
We're
going to
get in there somewhere.
There was another thing that I think we ought to talk about here before we conclude, that there's only one likely amendment to be considered here, and that is, again, the front-loading area of the bill, whether we want or require. We've talked about different means of and amounts. Required for front loading. We discussed potential sources of funding, obviously general fund appropriation. There's been some other attempts to invade the undistributed income, which gives some heartburn to some folk. There's an income stream from the earnings of that undistributed income, which is now, you say, 500, 600 million. What is that designated for?
Mr. Chairman, under the Act, the income earned on the reserves, on the undistributed income account, may not be used for the closing program, but may be used for the dividend program. I'm assuming an interest rate of 10%, and we do better than that. That $550 million next year will earn $55 million. To the extent that reserve is whole, we could, in effect, take the income stream from that each and every year and fund your entire program. Now, that has some parochial appeal, obviously, because if you maintain the reserve whole and you build a constituency to keep it whole, then, of course, that fulfills our fiduciary feelings that we want to keep those reserves. But it's quite possible, for example, now, on the undistributed income account, which we segment separately on our books, those earnings are parochial, could be dedicated to this program. And you could fund your program entirely each and every year.
What about that?
That's what I've been talking about all the time.
Well, I know you've been dabbling around the internet, but you've talked about invasion of the corpus.
No, you're talking about
just the earnings?
Just as the $500 billion hush fund they're playing with.
Yeah, but you're...
That's not the corpus.
No, I know, but he's talking about the earnings of that $500 million, which generates $55 million roughly next year, which would be sufficient, as I'm hearing it, to front-load in... perpetuity, or
there might be a need for a portion of that to front load the permanent fund itself.
No, they can't use it.
You can't use it for that. Is that right?
The legislature can use it they can appropriate it and put $200 million in there, and then that'll alleviate the heartburn the governor has. to take the $200,000
your express concerns regarding the earnings of that and your lack of concern regarding the corpus, utilizing the corpus for your ends.
I had it simplified this way. I had $500 million, that's what you got?
$547 million.
All right, take $200 million of that and put it in the annuity program, and that's earning the money, and you can do whatever you want with the other $300 million.
Well, of course, again, where
that
are you going to get...
That pays your annuity concept.
There might be a very significant...
There are two approaches. You can take Senator Ray's approach, which says take a lump sum,
sure,
$200 million, put it in the fund.
Right.
It's gone, it's appropriated, the program is set. That, of course, from a philosophical standpoint, says you have made a step toward reaching those reserves and anticipating.
Well, not reserves, Dave.
Well, that's...
We call it slush fund. That's what I call it.
That's one concept. But I would suggest that a better concept would be, rather than to consume that wealth, take it out of the fund and let it disappear, a better way is to use that wealth, to take the earnings of that wealth every year and put it into the program. And it's the same money. The only difference is, do you consume some of the corpus of that reserve on a one-time appropriation, or do you take the income stream from it? It does the same job. But one, philosophically, to tightwads like myself, is better than the other.
Mr. Chairman, the only reason I raise the question, I would hate for this committee, or I would not like for this committee, to come up with what they considered a bill that ran into some opposition from the permanent fund trustees, and that's why I want to know if it was acceptable with them, the language that we're looking at here, if it's acceptable with them or if it needs to be changed. Do you have a copy of this?
The bill itself.
Hey, Bob. They work for us, too, you know. They aren't some creatures out in outer space that we have to go with hat in hand. They're just holding our money for us until we need it.
I understand.
But I'd rather have their enthusiastic endorsement than their...
You'll never get their enthusiastic endorsement. They're spending the time and the money that they're playing with. You know what I'm saying?
Now, go ahead.
Yes, I think Mr. Rose and his board of trustees do work for us. But I think to get to Senator Ray's position is what you would do is take the reserves, which we have $547 million, take the earnings on a year to year if Senator Ray wanted to front load it, and take the earnings, which is $55 million, and for X number of years, take the earnings, and that's what your position is. Instead of taking the full amount of that and taking $200 million, I think we can...
I have no argument with that, Dave, because first, my original concept was the $200 million, because that's what the people were talking about, that you needed in order to start this thing up. And I was thinking, if you had the $200 million, you could draw just as much interest on that as you could yourself with it than something else. But now, if all you need is $55 million a year, fine with that. I don't care where you get it, as long as it's available.
Well, I think for tax reasons, if Tom, I'm sure we'll add, or you want to front load.
I have no quarrel with that.
Mr. Chairman, and I guess we look at it the same way as the dividend program. The dividend program has built a constituency for the fund that protects the corpus. If you did the same parallel thing with the income of the undistributed income account, you build a constituency to protect our reserves. In our best parochial interest as fiduciaries, we think that's a better way to go. And it does the job.
Is there any language to be drafted incorporated in the bill?
We can simply provide, we have a subsection on front loading, we can simply provide the legislature may appropriate from the earnings upon the undistributed earnings account.
Why don't we draft something that stipulates that?
That's fine. You've made your point very well, I think, with me. Anyway.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Again, if there needs to be any amendments made, I don't feel capable of drafting them.
Well, no, I think we should...
You got two expert drafters there.
Well, but speaking to...
Let's make it a point that if anybody does come up with an amendment from the commission, it must be in writing so everybody has a chance to look
at
that.
Okay. I wonder, while time permits, why don't we just go through the bill page by page and so far and see if anything falls out that alerts us to the need for additional amendment. I think Bob mentioned that. Deborah?
I might mention one technical error in drafting. It's on section 4. The way the bill is drafted, as you know, reverses the presumption that you'll get cash unless you choose an annuity to the presumption that you get an annuity unless you choose cash.
Mm-hmm.
And in section 4, the language language is reversed. It had ought to read, the current fund dividend application shall be prepared to allow an applicant to elect to receive a cash dividend in lieu of an annuity share.
Well, that actually takes care of the concern that Al has had, though. And there's no problem with that. Anybody? Okay. I think coupled with this other delay, 60-year-old, well, the public purpose is cited, of course, on the first page, and I certainly am satisfied with that personally. Does anybody have any recommendations regarding that? If not, we went through the annuity account. I think Bob brought up some pertinent points there. Now, page three, does anybody have any... what's this? The credit for persons over age 35 is the base amount increased for each year of age 35 up to 65. What?
That's a formula, Governor, for attributing front loading.
Oh, okay. All right.
Why does older people get front loaded?
Yeah, all right.
And that will change for quite a while.
It is, incidentally, here in 147B that the language regarding appropriation from the earnings upon the undistributed income account is okay.
Okay. Now, when you got the down here under E, the legislature may annually appropriate from the annuity account. Is that what you're going to call it? Down under E on page three.
The annuity account is just simply the deferred dividends plus.
And you see, in 147B on the previous page, it now says the legislature may appropriate general funds to the annuity account for front loading. That's what that's for. That will be changed to say something effective. The legislature may appropriate earnings from the undistributed income account under whatever the statute is.
Well, here you're talking about individual annuity accounts, and then over here you're talking about an annuity account, and then you're going to have an account in the permanent fund that's supposed to be the annuity account. So you're going to have to identify that pretty much singly all the way through if you can.
If you could distinguish between the collective annuity account versus the individual one, wherever that occurs, if you take that into consideration.
Okay. Now, John, you said... taken from the undistributed permit fund account. Can we also put that or general fund?
Or general fund.
Where would that appear? What?
You just got through B.
147B.
B? Oh. What? 147.
What are you saying, Al? I just got the place, but what were you...
Well, he just read it someplace. I was just...
Yeah, it's 147B. It's on the...
I got it. What's the word? What's the word?
It currently reads, legislation may appropriate general funds to the annuity account. The purpose, of course, is for front-loading. That's what the section is about. At Representative Adams' suggestion, we will revise that sentence to say it may appropriate either general funds or earnings from the undistributed income account.
Got options there.
Yeah. All right. Maybe we ought to read down through these. E, rather than make sure we don't miss anything. The legislature may annually appropriate from annuity account amount sufficient to administer the annuity program. Any cost of administration funded under this section shall be appropriately allocated among all individual annuity accounts. Anybody have a problem with that? F, notwithstanding such and such section of this area, or section, the board may invest all or part of the annuity account in commercial insurance contracts. You're talking about permanent fund trustees, boys.
What's the
right?
Board? Who's the board?
That's the area that Dave brought up.
You want to be called a permanent fund board?
That's what they already are.
All right.
Okay, now, that gives you some concerns, I know.
Mr. Chairman, because again, if we're going to commingle this money, all of our investment money, rather set up a separate investment program, we would prefer the ability to invest be placed in tandem with the existing statute which permits investment. GICs, I frankly don't know whether GICs fall within the present statute. They may well, but I just don't know.
What about if we open that up to this extent, again, depending on final resolution of that area and that question, notwithstanding such and such of this section, all or part of the annuity account may be invested in commercial insurance contracts and eliminate any reference to the board may. just would that injure or cause any problems or alleviate any concerns?
I think Dave's problem is that if they are going to be commingled, it's going to be hard to decide which 75 cents is an annuity 75 cents and which is a permanent fund $2. And if they're going to have authority to buy GICs, you want that to be universal for any of your funds, right?
And we also would like to preclude legislative adventures into dictating how that money should be invested, gold or whatever. We'd rather invest as fiduciaries without the dictate of should we invest in South Africa.
But this isn't a dictate.
But we don't want to be. How are we going to under Dave's concept of taking the earnings? How are we going to be investing anything at any time? We'll just be using that to spend our money, and those guys will be getting they're going to provide us with 45 or 55 or whatever the money is annually. So now, do we in turn take that and have you reinvest it?
Yes. Well, I think that's the concept. My preference would be to cut the check every year and turn it over to PERS and PERS and let them invest it whatever they want.
Then why don't you do that if we give you the power to do it?
That's our cleanest, preferable approach.
Yeah, but if we give you the power to invest it the way you want it, couldn't you do that?
Yes.
Yeah, well.
Mr. Chairman, we can hold on this tonight. We can have at least the language, the board or its designee for tonight, and then have the administration look at it, because we do apply for our longevity bonus under the Department of Administration. And
yeah.
Let's have a chance to look at it tonight and then come up with a solution in the morning, giving the administration a chance to look at this particular section.
I like that wording.
I do,
too. Wording fit with you, Dave?
Well, absolutely.
The board or its designee,
and
that even
goes to
that brought us to the point that we could live with it no matter what the final resolution.
Yeah.
I like that.
The administration give a chance.
Okay, you got note of that as respect to the member. Okay. Moving on to C, a parent guardian or other authorized representative may claim a permanent fund dividend on behalf of an unemancipated minor or on behalf of an incompetent individual who is eligible to receive a dividend under this section. Any problems with that?
Okay, Governor, the next, 7 pages of the bill are all from the permanent fund dividend.
Okay,
chapter.
So.
They are all conforming changes to reflect the reversal of the presumption that you get the annuity share.
Is there any way that we can slip an amendment in there that requires the administrative cost of the permanent fund distribution, dividend distribution, to be absorbed by other than the dividend distribution itself? Does that fit in here any place? Well, I frankly am a little bit distraught at that, because seemingly we're taking a portion of money that's supposed to be distributed and using it for administrative purposes when we don't do this in other hidden dividend programs, such as loan programs, that have, in essence, an enormous administrative cost or a substantial one that's absorbed from other quarters. And then that program, we're not requiring those who loan or borrow money from the state to pay for a portion of those costs, but we are doing it in this instance. Maybe there's nowhere in this to deal with that, but it is a concern that I'd sure like to discuss further. Okay, well then your suggestion, we move down to where? To get on to new language. Where do we have to go? John, you mentioned the next 7 pages, were it?
Well, I told you about section 4, we have to reverse the language. It says we get a receive cash instead of an annuity share. Section 5 simply amends the existing certification, which is now is an acknowledgement that I acknowledge that if I lie to you people, I will either have to pay my cash back or lose my credit, annuity credit.
Okay.
I'm looking through until you get the actual.
It's section 11, actually.
It's section, back, section 11.
Incidentally, well, I've made rude mention of the administrative costs. Can you tell me or anybody tell me what the administrative costs of the dividend program are now?
Very little.
Huh?
Very little.
Very little? I thought it was several billion dollars or a few billion bucks. No? How much?
Oh, Louie knows.
I don't know the exact amount, but it is under, it's under 2% of the total cost of the program.
Yeah. Which would then be roughly $4 million, or under $4
million. Oh,
wait a minute, no. It was distributed last year.
$500,000 is about all you're paying, isn't it?
It's under $500,000.
Oh, I see. Okay. I thought it was more.
I think I saw it was 380-some thousand or something like that.
Oh, okay. I thought it was substantially more. Well, then nobody would have an objection to it being picked up outside of the from the benefits itself, would they?
Well, now we just have to figure out which capital budget we're not going to do.
Well, dividend administration.
Well, it'll be for legislative.
But that was what you asked, wasn't it?
No.
I'm talking about the dividend distribution program, the cost of the administering the dividend distribution program are taken.
Now, that was the bonus, the $400,000 figure. Dividends, I think, is up
the... Mr. Chairman, the dividend program administration is roughly 50 people. It's an excess of $2 million.
Probably screwed up.
Okay. Well, so we're talking about $2 million cost. Again, but it's coming out of monies that I think ought to be distributed to the people if we're going to, unless we're going to treat all of these types of programs the same way and charge the cost of subsidized loans from those who are recipients of those loans too. But that's something we're not going to resolve here today. But if there is an area in here that deals with that, let me know where it is so I can at least reference to it. Okay, well, we're down to where then, John or Deborah, so far as...
Section 11, Article 2, annuity program.
Section 11, Article 2.
Yes, it's Article
2
annuity program.
Okay. All right, that begins. All right, the annuity fund is established a separate fund of the state treasury. The annuity fund shall be administered by the commissioner, shall be invested by the commissioner in the same manner as provided. Well, now, wait a minute. What is that? Doesn't that in itself alleviate some of your concerns, Dave? Aren't we stipulating? We're not we're talking about the commissioner making the investments rather than the, aren't we?
No.
Why not? Look, read that.
Well, that's the money that's in the fund, not the money. That's this year's money.
Instead of the annuity account. The annuity account is what
that's right.
We talked about. Okay, I get you. All right, the annuity fund consists of appropriation made to the annuity fund by the legislature. Is that where the front load wouldn't go into that?
You have the annuity account within the permanent fund that has $200 million in it. It's going to take $40 million to pay annuities in fiscal year 1997. There has to be an appropriation by the legislature from the annuity account to the annuity fund.
Okay. All right.
So we should have a zero balance at the end of the year.
But we're still talking about investments of that account.
Well, they'll have it for 12 months.
Oh, all right. Or that fund.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Money in the annuity fund shall be used to pay annuities to eligible recipients. Section 42, 23, 120, payment of annuities. An individual who holds one or more annuity shares may receive an annuity upon reaching the age of 65. I suppose this is getting into the area of where you will make your proposed amendment regarding Al's concerns. B, an annuity under this section is a monthly payment during the life of the annuitant. The amount of the monthly payment shall be based upon principal accrued interest in the person's annuity account. Shall be determined by the department using the straight life annuity with defined contribution plan. Size of annuity may not vary on account of sex. The straight life annuity has come up for some criticism somewhere. I saw someone had referred to it and questioned it. Is there anybody that can address that issue? I can't even remember what the pension.
Mr. Tagmani.
That's right.
This morning.
Yeah. And he's not here now.
He wanted a modified annuity so that if the recipient died before the total amount was used up, the residue would go to the estate or to beneficiaries, which is one concept of annuities, but they usually are written for a time certain. I buy an annuity for 10 years. If I die at the end of 8, the 2-year payment or what's left would be a part of my estate. Mm-hmm. But and usually they terminate at the end of the 10 years. If you don't die within the stipulated time, you really have a problem. That was my house. I didn't
want to
argue with the gentleman. He was...
Yeah. Dave or Otto, this... if there is any desire on the part of the legislature perhaps amalgamate the benefit concept into a program of this nature, what does this language regarding straight life annuity in any way, shape, or form impose upon, preclude, or whatever?
I think Bob was really getting at a point that I think is one that you should address, that the committee should address, is that if you read the rest of your proposed legislation, it really flies in the face of what Mr. Tagmina was bringing up. Right? What he was suggesting was that you have here a straight life annuity and that you should have some form of joint survivor or survivorship option tied to that annuity. And from just my reading of it, that's not what you're proposing at all. So I think Bob's point is well taken, is that you know, in other words, he's right that there's other types of annuities. There might be 15 or 16 other types of annuities, but that's not the one that the committee has put in the bill.
A straight life annuity will pay you a given amount, monthly or however, for the rest of your natural life. Mm-hmm. The only way you beat it is to live a long time. If you die early, those that die early, the residue helps to pay for those that live beyond the life expectancy. It's all on the actuarial tables. I think it's the most preferred route to go for the purpose of this bill.
Well, if you go down to Section D, it couldn't say it any clearer that that's what the intent of the bill was.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. So that the fact is, in that regard, I think Mr. Tagmini was wrong, and his assumption that the committee wanted something other than what they put in writing.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, any further discussion on that issue or suggestion?
I'll buy the bill the way it is.
All right. An individual need not be a resident of the state to be eligible to receive an annuity. We've gone through this before. Is there any further discussion?
Where's that?
Okay.
What section is that?
It's section 4323.20C, the page of the bill. It's two from the end, the second to the last page, right? Section C, an individual need not be a resident of the state to be eligible to receive an annuity.
I'd like to have that perfectly clear that we're talking to receive an annuity. I mean, they go so that they know what they're talking about exactly. I think it. We don't want to get in some argument with some guy from Washington petition up here to join the thing and get an annuity.
Is your concern that people may
be a resident to receive to contribute to the plan because you have to be a resident to receive a permanent fund dividend? And so the person from Washington can't.
Well, so I mean, an individual need not be a resident of the state to be eligible to receive an annuity once he is in the program, or once he is established, qualifies into the program, something like
receive
that.
Receive an annuity payment.
Yeah, something. Because just say receive an annuity.
Why don't I say to be eligible to receive an annuity payment from his annuity account?
Yeah.
Because he won't have an account.
Right. Something like that, so we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. And also, I don't want any confusion. We're talking at all about the possibility of longevity bonus being paid.
Okay.
So, but, okay,
get the annuity.
Huh?
If he left the state.
If he left, he'd get the annuity. That's all I said.
But longevity is out.
I don't know. Maybe in your amending language that you mentioned, maybe you ought to put a little addendum on here.
Put a whole new subsection to say
that they're not eligible for the longevity bonus, more for clarification purposes or public
concern. The longevity bonus
you got some language.
Is under an entirely different
okay.
section of the bill.
And that makes it clear in that section. Okay. All right, D, an annuity.
Yeah.
Can the wording be his earned annuity? You're just saying his annuity, right? Or his or her annuity. Can you say his or her earned annuity, by any chance?
What?
The reason is I'm going to bring up my mother-in-law from Montana for a couple of years until she gets into the annuity program and then ship her back to Montana. Hmm. She can still receive annuity under this particular deal, right? Mm-hmm. She's got a residence.
For only 2 years. There
is. That's right. But it's her earned annuity for those 2 years.
Yes.
That's why I'm saying the wording should be said earned annuity.
I don't quite follow the opposite of that example. What's the...
There is no unearned annuity.
There's this, right. It just says it's an open thing here.
Well, if they put the language on their account, then that'll take care of it.
Okay.
And they're going to put the additional language of the annuity as provided for under their account.
Okay.
And that'll
take care of
it. That's earned right there, yeah.
That's fine.
They would no longer be participating into that account.
D, an annuity share may not be assigned, sold, or otherwise transferred from one individual to another. An annuity share held by an individual is canceled upon the death of that individual, does not pass to the individual's estate. The right to receive an annuity under such and such section terminates upon the death of the person who is eligible for the annuity. If an individual dies before reaching age 65, the funds credited to that individual's account shall be redistributed among all annuity accounts under regulations adopted by the department.
Put the word other, all other annuity accounts.
Redistributed among all other annuity accounts?
That's right.
All other.
Right.
Is there any inconsistency at all in saying that when you depart the scene by virtue of your demise, your annuity account is worthless? I mean, the monies that you've invested become worthless. But if you depart by virtue of simply flying to another state.
Well, you could put that in there. If you could, you could put that in. If an individual dies before reaching age 65, his account is no longer valid, and the funds credited to the individual accounts will be redistributed among all other annuity accounts under regulations. That's what you're saying.
No, what I'm saying is, why did we, and I at the time certainly approved it, on the basis of somebody has bought an annuity account. While they're a resident of the state, each year they have accumulated shares in an annuity account. They depart the state, we said, hey, this is a legitimate investment they have made, they're eligible to receive return on that account. On the other hand, doesn't it suggest itself that if you depart the scene by your demise, that you've got an estate accumulation there?
What
is the distinction between
the two? The first implicates the right to travel because you're discriminating against people in the state.
Okay, good point.
Yeah, then everybody dies.
Okay. An individual does not receive a vested property right in an annuity payment until that payment is made. Notwithstanding the provision of this section, the state is not obligated to provide annuity payments for annuity shares granted under. Okay. A. Person who is 65 years of age or older who resides in the state for at least 1 year immediately preceding application for longevity bonus under this chapter may apply to the Commissioner of Administration for qualification to receive a monthly bonus.
If this is talking about a bonus, is this talking about longevity?
Okay.
Yeah.
Just a second.
Yes.
Back on D, if the individual dies after reaching 65, you have covered how to disperse before the age of 65. Where in did you discover how to disperse the shares?
They don't disperse. They terminate.
They die with it.
If there's money left in
the value.
If the person dies after he's 65, that, under your normal annuity scheme, would be used to cover the additional payments you're going to have to make to those who outlive their actuarial tables.
In here you make a very big effort. I mean, you write down a sentence that says, funds credited to that individual's account shall be redistributed among all annuity accounts.
Yeah, now, but right above it, it says an annuity account held by an individual is canceled upon the death of that individual.
Yeah, but that's dealing with the person and what, just that it's canceled. Down here you said what you're going to, how you're going to disperse those funds, but only for those people before age 65.
Isn't the end result the same?
No, the end result is different. For a person who dies after 65, everybody gets a piece of that account. Every eligible person. That's right. Okay. If a person over 65 dies but still has some money left in, that money goes to a fairly limited group, which is those who have outlived the actuarial table, the ones Bob just described.
Well, and where does that say that?
Well, it doesn't. We can put it in there.
Okay, good point. All right. See, the amount of bonus on last page of the month, longevity bonus is equal to 250, increased by 3% each year beginning fiscal 87, minus the maximum possible annuity for a person 65 years of age under the annuity program is determined by the Commissioner of Revenue. You probably have your modifying language in here as well.
Can you see the first attempt of what the first pressure is going to be upon to change this once it's in there? It's going to say, well, if my husband dies or my wife dies, I'm not going to be able to make it without getting her share of the annuity. So it come to me as a surviving beneficiary.
That's the first attack is going to be on it. It'll be on the notice. Huh? It'll be on the joint survivorship notice.
It'll be on the first attack to change the law, so it'll do it.
But not in that section.
Great.
Maybe I have a question to Deborah or Tom. In our calculations of the fiscal effects of running out the numbers, we've assumed that the annuity accounts of deceased people would be divided up among people of their age group who entered into the program in the same year they entered into it, or were at the same age, rather. There is a substantial difference in effect and decisions that would need to be made in terms of how that pie of the results from the annuity accounts of deceased gets divided up among the rest. If it goes to younger people equally, it has a substantial more leverage.
Oh, I see. So if for every 34-year-old that dies, his money would be distributed pro rata to all, or on some basis, to all of the 34-year-old.
That's what you predicated your presumptions on. Huh. The bill doesn't make that clear, by any
means. No, it doesn't. It says everybody gets it. I'm sure. My question is, that's obviously a policy call.
It is.
Which should be decided on a basis other than the fact that Greg's already done it one way. And Greg, just leave it to Greg to explain what the policy reasons for doing it that way.
Well, there are more 60-year-olds likely to die than there are 10-year-olds.
So it weights the distribution.
If you divide it up among equally, when in effect take away from the 60-year-old class and add to the 10-year-old class. Now, there's nothing necessarily wrong about that.
Yeah, Bob?
I wonder if we're talking about this paragraph D, the last sentence, where we added other annuity accounts. If we delete all, it would read then, the funds credited to that individual's account shall be distributed among annuity accounts under regulations adopted by the department.
Is that just calling your attention to the fact that you left a good deal of policy discretion to the department?
Well, yes, that's true, but I thought that was within reason.
It may very well be.
Well, they're going to do it anyway, Bob, and as soon as the legislature gets out, all these emergency regulations
come out. Well, we're running into a problem here with the wording all other annuity accounts, right?
Is that where the problem
so
running into?
No.
All other similar. No.
I just was going to strike all and let the department draw up the regulations.
Well, we could be specific in our redrafting if the committee said redraft the bill tonight. So the distribution is among people of the same age.
Looks to me like there's a problem in that one sentence.
Okay. I would ask, Dan, we had talked in the past about the possibility of meshing into this bill. I'm not sure how it would be done, language which would at least accommodate a benefits concept approach. If you've got copies of this, I suspect. If you want to as well submit in writing some proposed amending language that would bring that issue before this body. But I want to make it clear again that I want to develop this in as best form as we can come up with, quite separate from as well from your approach, which I think is an alternative would alleviate or eliminate many of the objections of the committee and be the best of all worlds if it could be put together in such a way as to be acceptable and do the things that we hope it could do. So, but let's take a look at what you would suggest for either incorporation or rejection or held holding in abeyance. Well, with that, what is your pleasure regarding, is there any other issue at this time that you'd like to bring up, Bob?
One question. In regards to this bill, is it possible that our good friends, Mr. Law, could handle the longevity bonus program with their concept within this bill? Could we still use that as a funding? Or are we going to have to drop a separate bill?
To the degree, we're talking about acquiring a $50 million front load on an annual basis. That suggested, Dave Rose mentioned, hey, please don't invade the undistributed income, but here's the earnings of that may be a source of funding. The concept that benefit Dan and Otto have put forth seemingly could, rather than generating the 200 or enough monies to fund the insurance concept they're talking about, I suppose it could be applied to generating the 50 million or whatever a year you wanted to put into a front load. It'd be at a significantly reduced level, but I don't think they're mutually exclusive. But by the same token,
I'm just wondering if their financing recovery vehicle could be.
If they can put together a package that has the appeal that they indicate it does in fact have, it may be a much better means of securing the funding than what we're talking about so far as extracting it from the income stream of the but again, if you want to work on that, Dan, and provide us with that language for consideration tomorrow before we finalize this, Tom?
When we inserted in .004F the reference to commercial insurance contract, Dan, that's what we had in mind.
So you think
that... What page was that, sir?
It's on... My pages are not numbered, Mr. Adams, but it's .147, 37.113, 147F.
Page 3.
Is that about page 3?
It's about page 3, yes. Right above section 3, where there's a reference to commercial insurance contracts.
Notwithstanding such and such of this section, the board or its designee may invest all or part of the annuity account in commercial interest.
Commercial insurance contract.
Right.
That was the idea.
Okay, is there any further comment or discussion on the bill? The last item on the agenda was signing the next meeting time date and location, and that would be tomorrow morning at 9:30, I guess, here.
Yep. Right here.
So, with that, thank you all.
Can we leave this stuff here? Don't leave the table.
How about that? Is that possible?
Is anybody here?
Can we leave this just as I sure would like to do that.